Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you're listening to a special milestone edition of Psychic Viewpoint. Tonight marks the 200th show, and I'm excited to celebrate Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Jessica Murray will join us to discuss the occult origins of Christmas. But before we get started, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you tonight?
I'm doing much better. Thank you very much for asking me.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm sorry. Merry Christmas in advance to you.
Happy Hanukkah's over. Yes, and you too.
And happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa as well. We got a whole bunch of holidays.
And 200 show. Woohoo. Wow. Yeah,
it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Well, what do you do for Psychic Access?
What I do
for... Yeah, yeah.
I'm an intuitive consultant and empath, and I help people. Ideally, I love helping people when they want some spiritual direction, and I'm well versed in other things too as well. But I use tarot. I'm self-taught, but I do feel that tarot is a symbolic record of human experience, and from my own experience, I've connected very well with the truth, the factual truth of things. So, yeah,
absolutely. And you connect that well on behalf of all your clients as well. You can visit Maureen at PsychicAccess.com. We encourage you to do so. Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
Well, Carmen, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay, thank you. Thanks, Stephen. I have a little bit of the Christmas flu, you know, 'tis the season. It's a yearly tradition of mine. It's that or the New Year's flu.
Bless your heart, you've got the Christmas flu.
That's right, yes.
Oh my, is that like some sort of weird Canadian Christmas gift of some sort?
And it's overly over socializing. I believe that we all do it from going out too much. It's almost statistically guaranteed at this time of year that half of us get sick around Christmas or New Year.
Or it could be you're working very hard on behalf of your clients as well, because you're
That's
also
true.
At PsychicAccess.com, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, so I work with you, and I'm an empath and telepath, and a tarot card reader. And a writer with your group.
Very nice, very nice, very talented. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Carmen. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then finally, Steve, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Stephen.
Very glad to hear that. Thank you for joining us tonight. You're definitely an inspiration to all of us.
Thank you.
Well, what do you do for PsychicAccess.com?
I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer. So I like to combine both the astrology and the channeling aspect of my work in order to provide insight.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, well, Steve is definitely one of our top-tier psychics. If you want a consultation with him, by all means, visit him at PsychicAccess.com. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you.
Well, tonight, as I said, we have with us Jessica Murray, an astrologer, author, cultural commentator. She's highly regarded for her mastery of astrology, and you can visit her at www.mothersky.com, where you can discover the innovative Skywatch service, which lets you track current cosmic conditions and plan your day accordingly. Jessica's the author of Soul Signation and At the Crossroads, and she has contributed to an anthology called Transpersonal Astrology. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Jessica. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Welcome back to Psychic Viewpoint.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Well, we certainly have a lot to cover tonight, so let's go ahead and hop into it. Let's start out with Christmas itself. What are its origins?
Wow.
That's
a
good question.
I mean, this is a holiday everybody feels, isn't it? Despite, you know, all the clashes about belief systems, but you know that astrology looks at these things as based on natural cycles. So for us, it all boils down to what the seasons were doing. And the original holidays were festivals that marked specific seasonal shifts, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, that divided up the year. And they were all based on agriculture. They used an agricultural reference point. And so, you know, they used nature and they had those some things that were eternal for them. They used the sky as their main calendar. And they had I'm thinking particularly of the wheel of the year in the Celtic tradition, where Yule was the winter solstice when the sun was born. And, you know, S-U-N, the sun started its cycle to come back, and heat and light began to increase again. And somewhere along the line, you notice it got turned into a sun, S-O-N, in some stories that got told about the solstice, like the Christian one.
Very interesting. I think we forget how important the sun was to ancient peoples who really had modern science. I mean, how did we know back then, if we lived then, that the sun was going to come back from day to day? We had no scientific guarantee.
I think that is such a good point. You know, I think that's the root of this business of hope and faith that you hear about in Christianity surrounding Christmas. It's really the hope that the light will return. Because like you say, in the pre-modern world, they didn't have their little digital calendars and their little smartphones to tell them that there was any certainty at all that life was going to continue. And winter pretty much meant death, unless you were prepared, for denizens of the Northern Hemisphere. And I think that also the physical and psycho-spiritual withdrawal into the cave during winter and moving slowly and conserving what you'd put by, waiting for the light to return. I think it all had this biological reality of winter that we've lost, but that they used to celebrate. And you're right. I mean, how could you not celebrate Yule if it was the moment when a dead world was going to be redeemed by this glorious return to life?
Well, you once described the winter solstice to me in a really wonderful way, the light getting ready to pivot. And seeing as how the winter solstice appears to be the sort of agent that makes Christmas special for everybody, you know, Yule or whatever holiday you celebrate, what is the solstice for those of us who might not know?
Well, it comes from sol is the root, which is sun. And sistere is Latin for to stand still. So solstice is when the sun seems to stand still, when it seems to pause before turning around. It's all a geocentric illusion, you know. It's what humans perceive from Earth's point of view. But that's where the meaning lies in this view. It's what appears to us to be reality. So in an astronomical sense, the solstice, the winter solstice, is when the relative yearly path of the sun perpendicular to the horizon stops and reverses direction. It's gone progressively further south of the equator, further and further, and when it reaches that most southerly point, that's when winter officially begins, again in the Northern Hemisphere. And we start to get this sense of the period of darkness turning into light. And we honor it as the shortest day of the year because it's that turning point. But, you know, what's interesting to astrologers, more than the astronomy of it, and to anybody who does ritual, is that it's also a turnaround in an esoteric sense because light is symbolic of consciousness.
That's very profound. And I think you just struck at the heart of the whole issue here, consciousness. Christmas makes us more conscious of the material side of things because we all seem to get more acquisitive during Christmas, you know. But yet mm-hmm. it's also such a spiritual time of the year as well. And so I like how you describe that, how it's sort of a pivot point also of the consciousness as well.
Mm-hmm. All about that, and something you said earlier strikes me as the whole point of it, which is that idea of hope, that it wasn't a guarantee that the light would come back. And so this correlates to the fact that the sign Sagittarius, which is the sign of belief, is what's going on for most of December every year in the Northern Hemisphere, this, you know, this coldest, darkest moment of the calendar year. Is two-thirds of it is about the sign of belief. And you have Sagittarians in your audience maybe that know this very well, that it's the sign that seeks meaning and asks the big questions of life. And you know, just by the by, we had a very interesting transit from 1994 to 2008 when Pluto, the most powerful transit in the sky, was passing through Sagittarius, and it was then that the world's religions, or the world's dominant sky god religions, really entered a dicey period. You know what I mean? Those three established religions, Judaism and Islam, they all entered periods of crisis when Pluto was in Sagittarius.
Right, and now also we have, I believe, transiting Mars and Jupiter that are configuring into what's going on with Pluto right now as well, no?
Right. As Pluto has gone into Capricorn now, it made that switch in 2008. And that's part of a big, big old transit system that I call the Cardinal Cross, which is, you know, it's all astrologers are talking about. It's very dominant. It marks out this era that we're in. And the biggest player in this transit system is Pluto in Capricorn. And, you know, shall we say a little bit about the cross?
Absolutely.
In case people want to be reminded. All the equinoxes and solstices since Pluto made that switch have been explosive because they've triggered this, the longest arm of that cross, the Uranus-Pluto square. You know, there were all these world-altering events that happened on the spring and fall equinoxes and on the winter and summer solstice. Benazir Bhutto, that was the first one that hit me that this was going to be the pattern, because that was the winter solstice of 2008 when she was assassinated.
The Prime Minister of Pakistan,
horrible,
right?
Say it again.
The Prime Minister of Pakistan, right? Okay.
Yeah. And then we had the BP oil disaster, which was the summer solstice of 2010. That was huge because they were all hitting the early degrees of this cardinal cross, which was occupying the signs that Uranus and Pluto are in. And I think that we need to look at Pluto in Capricorn as the most intense player. I write a lot about this. I have a whole book on just that one square. It's so key a way to understand our era. Capricorn is the sign of the idea of civilization, no less. So that means, you know, Pluto is the planet of death and rebirth. So we're talking about the whole idea of civilization breaking down.
It's frightening but beautiful all at the same time, I dare say.
I think that's true, Stephen. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the regeneration of it, of course, is attractive, but the breakdown part of it probably won't be attractive.
It's easier to take, I think, when we back up and look at how it's played out before. It's easier to read, for example, about history and something like how the British used to, when they were ruling the world, the last great empire, when in the 19th century, you know, the British, their idea of civilization was to you know, get the people in Africa to wear good English tweed trousers or something. And we look at that and we kind of laugh, right? So we're looking at civilization now. It's harder to see our assumptions about what civilization is. But it's not hard to see that, you know, it's breaking down. I mean, our government is utterly dysfunctional. And a lot of the...
I was just going to say, I think I read somewhere that Pluto's effects are very subtle anyway. Powerful, yet buried and subtle.
Yeah, because they take so long to happen. I mean, it's a 250 years worth of, in this case, notions about what makes a country civilized is what's breaking down right now. And we're talking about a very natural cycle, a process of decay. It's very organic. It happens to the food that you leave out too long in the fruit basket. And then we can look at it and say, well, that makes sense. It's just grown toxic and it's being exposed and it has to go. But when we're in a society where our institutions are having that happen to them, it's much harder to take.
Absolutely. And we also have this Mars transit, which is and this is passing through during the Christmas season this year. What sort of effect do you think, and we're speculating here, I understand, what sort of effect do you think that might have on people in the holiday season this year?
Well, Mars is the most quickly moving planet of that whole system we were talking about. So you've got basically four different pieces of the cardinal cross. And it sounds, you know, its meaning is just like it sounds. It's like we're being crucified in energetically. And we really do need to see this as a geometrical thing that's going on and understand it abstractly in order to see what it's about. Mars is sort of the trigger because it comes around as the last little piece of the picture, sort of like the second hand on a clock is the one that catches up to the others that are already in place. If anybody can remember analog clocks, that's my analogy.
I remember
them. And Mars is... Go ahead.
Oh, I remember them. I was just going to say Mars is like the second hand on this doohickey, right? And when he hits a certain place on the clock face, boom, boom.
Then we hear the chimes. And Uranus and Pluto are the ones that have the hands of the clock, as it were, that have been there for the longest. And they're actually in their peak period from 2012 to 2015. But when Mars, which moves much more quickly, kind of spins around and catches up with where they are to make this grand cross, and Jupiter's in there on the other side of the thing. Actually, on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, Mars is going to oppose Uranus. It's really started now with the intense period that astrologers have been looking at for the solstice season started at the full moon the other day. But it has this series of peaks. So the Mars is going to do its number with Uranus, Christmas and the day before, and Mercury will be in there. And then Mars will square Pluto exactly on the 30th and 31st of December. But you're asking more what it means, I think. And I think that we have to back up and realize that from the point of view of the most meaningful piece of that cross, which is the Pluto and Capricorn piece, which is a long, like you said, slow, gradual process of breakdown leading to renewal. And it's the one that demands the most perspective from us because we get spooked when we see something dying. Even if it's something that's horribly riddled with toxicity, like the U.S. Congress. But you have to look, I think, from this big historical viewpoint and look at the things that Capricorn means, which are government and corporations and rules and bureaucracies and boundaries. And then you look at what Uranus means, which is challenging all these Plutonian things. Uranus is really people power at its best,
right.
You know, at its highest. It also means technology and a lot of the other things which have a shadow side as well as a fabulous side. But this clash, the intensity of this clash, is meant to be just taking us through this period by the short hairs. There's no way we could have avoided it. It's just an intense period.
So not only will this Mars transit sort of electrify the Christmas season, but we're also kicking off 2014 perhaps with maybe some insurgencies in different parts of the world perhaps,
yes,
or there'll be something
right.
of that nature.
That's right. An insurgency is a wonderful Uranian concept, the idea of people rising up relatively suddenly, relative to, you know, the 84 years of a Uranus cycle. The insurgencies that we've had since Uranus went into Aries and joined this transit have been relatively abrupt and surprising, and that's part of their power. So every time there's a peak, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time. Did you say something?
Oh, no, that wasn't me. I apologize.
Okay, that was some other noise.
Right.
You know, when there's a peak in this long-running transit, those are the times when astrologers kind of put the yellow highlighter around the date. And one of those peaks, like you're saying, is now, this solstice season, the end of 2013. We're going to have another set of peaks in January, but I think that the biggest one for 2014 is going to be in April, in the spring. And that's when we're going to have the Grand Cross is going to be a coalescing of a bunch of different planets in the sky. And Americans especially are going to be kept on the edge of their seats because the way that the cross will relate to the chart of the USA is very tight. You know, the entity that was born July 4th, 1776, it has a chart too. And it's going to fit in with this cardinal cross very strongly in April.
So yes, you're talking about the Sibley chart, which we discussed on July the 4th. So you're saying there's almost like a synastry between these two, between the Sibley chart and this grand cross.
That's right. And I have an article on Daykeeper Journal that comes out next month for people who want more detail. But a lot of astrologers are talking about it. Bill Herbst has a wonderful article in the current Mountain Astrologer. The part of the Sibley chart, I won't go into too much detail because I could ramble on this one. it has a real weak spot that, you know, we could call it the group soul of the USA, and that's the sun that squares Saturn that chart. And that's the very part of the chart that's going to be highlighted by the Grand Cross this spring.
That's very interesting. It's almost as if the very ego of the nation is going to be turned against the government. Oh, because that square involves the 10th house in the Sibley chart, doesn't it? Because Saturn is in the 10th house, right?
That's right. You know, that is one way that it could play out. And I think it's very hopeful to a lot of people. But the idea of the people, you know, capital P, this is the heart and soul of the notion of democracy. And so Uranus is said to govern democracy for that reason, of the people, by the people, for the people. Beautiful ideal that's enshrined in the USA chart from different things, different details in the chart. But now, Pluto, no surprise, governs plutocracy. And Pluto is square to Uranus in the sky for everybody, for all countries. So the whole notion of plutocracy versus people power.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes putting a light, shining a light on the awful corruptions that are happening, not just here, but I think that the USA is going to be kind of a poster child for this, these revelations.
Well, I do believe you mentioned that Mars is going to be forming an opposition to Uranus, correct? Did I get that right?
On Christmas.
Well,
and it's staying in Libra for a long time because it's going retrograde. So it's going to go back and forth across these critical degrees.
So this is going to be stretched out for a while because it'll be going backwards and putting it forward again, then putting it in reverse perhaps.
That's right.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I've always sort of read that the opposition aspect represented like an avoidance of something. So might we speculate that if Uranus is in opposition to Bloody Mars, that this might be sort of like a bloodless type of insurrection, a lot of protesting perhaps, but, you know, without actually crossing the line into violence. Would that be, would we be able to speculate that?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think that all the elements are in there. Mars does govern war, but it is in Libra. So, I mean, it's in Libra in the sky right now. So that is kind of a signature of negotiation. It's a very ambivalent placement, though, because it does have to do with aggression and putting the will forward, even in a collective, which is what we're talking about at the moment, you know, that a whole group would have this vibe. But in Libra, it tries to work things out. It struggles with reasoned argument and so on. I think that we could see a low-level version of Mars in Libra coming out in the U.S., you know, sphere, and these dreadful so-called debates that people have. The idea of a debate is Libra, but the reality when you have unconscious ego behind it, as we know when we look at the Democrats and Republicans, they aren't really debates at all. You see, so everything depends on the level of consciousness of the people.
Right. Yes, because a lot of those debates just turn into filibustering, and there's just useless consumption of time for no really constructive purpose.
Right. Nonsense. But you know, what the transit will do is cast the light upon it. That's what I'm looking at, not so much that it's going to resolve anything. Because like you said, the process of decay and regeneration is slow and drawn out for a reason. It's natural law. But it's going to for sure shine a light on these things. It's all about, you know, kind of making the group, in this case, making a running leap of consciousness. Like happened when the Julian Assange let loose with WikiLeaks, and then the NSA thing, which had been going on for years, but suddenly it was front page, and suddenly it was part of the public conversation. And
it's
that's
a big
what
deal
we're
now.
Here. Yeah.
That's very interesting. Now, we've seen so far how the Christmas season is rooted in the sacredness of the solstice. We've talked a little bit about some of the quote-unquote Christmas signs, such as Sagittarius and Capricorn, and what's going on with those two signs today. What can we do as moderns to reclaim the spirituality of the solstice and sort of embody what it originally meant? You know, sort of get back out of what so popularly called the consumer orgy that it has become in modern Christmas in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's what this is really all about, Stephen. I mean, for consciousness seekers to plug into the deeper meaning of these seasonal shifts, which are marked by the equinoxes and the solstices, and you don't have to be an astrologer to track them. I think it's what's extraordinary is that more people don't go by them, because I think that it's cellular memory. I say go by them. I mean even pay attention to the fact that you feel on a body level like curling up with a good book in bed and going to bed earlier when it's dark and cold outside. And I think that we all feel these things as animals. And that it's a sort of a testament of how disconnected we've become. If we can't even pay attention to this most primal impulse anymore. You know, the idea of bounding up from the Thanksgiving dinner table to go shopping in the pre-dawn, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about, really. But I've read a lot about the Black Friday thing, and it sounds so perverse that, you know, you can hardly imagine a more ironic thing to become an institution at a time like this. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm complaining about how we have gotten out of touch, which is the answer to your question, is to go back to the primal meaning, to notice how we're cut off in the developed Western world, but then to get into imagining that, you know, if you had been a pre-modern person in a tribe where the warmth and the heat were steadily ebbing, and you'd been watching animals and plant life slow down and go dormant, and then your shaman or your priestess gave you this story, this beautiful legend about a return, this back to the hope and faith we're talking about. And if you think that we do retain in our DNA somewhere, you know, what Jung would have called it in the collective unconscious, that we retain a memory of that physical reality, you know, life and death reality for millennia, then I don't think it's hard to tune in again to this magnificent concept, which is true in a natural sense, that the winter solstice is announced by this imperceptible spark in the dark of light returning, and to celebrate it, even if you just do it privately with a candle.
Absolutely. And Christianity gives its congregants and believers the assurance that, for a time at least, the sun is nailed to the cross of reality, you know, and we know where the sun is at least temporarily.
Right.
You know, it's going to go away again, but it promises to come back. And that's one aspect of the Christmas saga we're going to get into when we come back from commercial, is the idea of redemption and getting a second chance to start over again. But right now we're going to take a one-minute commercial. I'd like to remind everybody, if they would like to book a consultation with Jessica Murray, you can find her at www.mothersky.com. Thank you very much. We will be right back.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing, and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at PsychicAccess.com.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to Psychic Viewpoint. Tonight we have with us, for our 200th show anniversary, Jessica Murray. And we are speaking about the spirituality, the spiritual roots of Christmas. And before we went to commercial break, we were talking about how to sort of reconnect with the spiritual origins of the winter solstice. And Jessica, you had some lovely comments about that, how to sort of reclaim Christmas as a good season again for us.
Yeah, and I don't think it can be done, Stephen, until people get the context of how it started. Like we were talking about earlier, that, you know, holidays, holy days, are based on natural cycles, which are real to every human being and animal and plant that inhabits the earth. We're all connected, in other words, naturally, to the seasons. We all know what they mean. And back when, if you use the Celtic model, where they had the winter solstice, for them it was the new year. They saw it as the beginning where the sun was born. And they featured it in the pre-sky god era, in the prehistoric religions. They saw it as a great goddess who had this young male god offshoot. And that was him who was born at the winter solstice. He represented the sun, S-U-N. And then we had the next quarter, which was the spring equinox. And then he was in his infancy. They called it Ostara, from which we get Easter. Mm-hmm. And then there was the summer solstice, and the crops are in their prime, and so was the young god in their schema. by that point in the middle of summer. And then they had Mabon, which is the autumn equinox, which you know is a harvest festival. So I think, and then by that time the sun god was diminishing in power, just like the heat and light were diminishing. And then we're back to Yule again, or the winter solstice, another new year. To me, there's such a logic to it. Maybe it's the Taurus in me. But I find it so utterly reasonable and kind of intuitive, a system, that I don't think it's possible to not get it, you know, and to tune into the glory of each of these for what they mean once you get the context.
Christmas used to be an organic holiday with chestnuts roasting on an open fire and all of this good thing. You know, it used to be true to its agricultural roots. And I think what you're saying is that one of the reasons we can't recapture the magic of the solstice is because we've cut ourselves off from the land. We're no longer a part of the land.
I think that's true in so many ways, that we cut off our nose to spite our face in more ways than one, by deciding that we were separate from the environment. And, you know, Rick Tarnas has a beautiful way of talking about this in The Passion of the Western Mind, how we got separated not only from nature but from our bodies and sexuality as we went through the Cartesian Revolution and so on. But pre-environmental America was not a pretty sight. You know, I'm thinking of the way things were in my childhood, you know, in the 50s and 60s, where we didn't have any sense of ecology. The word hadn't even been coined yet. And, you know, the nature was just scenery, basically.
It's a resource to be used.
Yeah, which it still is in the blinkered industrial mind. But something you were saying about how do we reconnect with what I think our animal natures already know, right, as living beings on the earth? And I think that our unconscious, collective unconscious, remembers too. And what was going on for so many centuries in the human race was that our emotional and psychological states of mind matched up with what was going on with the seasons. There was a match. And so I don't think it's that hard to reconnect with the natural organicity of the holidays. If you see that, I don't even think you have to be in nature, if you see what I mean. It's not even just a literal thing of being on the land, although that would help, I agree with you. It's also something more subtle than that, which you might call the psychic DNA of human beings.
Right, it can be taken metaphorically as well.
Say it again.
So it can be taken metaphorically as well. You know, if I'm a city dweller, you know, I can still recapture the magic of an organic Christmas that's centered around the solstice, you know, and understand the meaning of that, even if I live in a city.
That's right. I mean, astrologers often, I live in a city, and I rarely see the sky and the planets that I read about in my tables, my lists of degrees.
Right.
But we're plugged in nonetheless because everything's connected. And I think from an esoteric point of view, this is really what counts. I think that idea you were saying earlier is just a wonderful point, that the trust that's at the core of the meaning of this holiday. And what about its shadow? What about the opposite of that trust? That seems to me to be related to the crisis of faith that so many people go through at this time of year. And then they call it the Christmas blues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, that's emblemized beautifully in the Wheel of the Zodiac as we transition from Sagittarius, which is ruled by Jupiter, as you know, and is full of faith, you know, into cold, inhibited Capricorn, materialistic, earthy Capricorn, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course, that's, and on a personality level, those are really very clearly borne out the fire of the one and then the bummer of the other. But I really think that if we didn't get into this sort of societally dictated bustling around like we do and partying and going out when it's so cold, right? Or it's
right.
Sort of just the opposite of what our karmic memory tells us should be done at this time of year. I think that we exacerbate this disconnect you were talking about. I mean, I think that this existential sense of doom would still be there,
right,
underneath the surface of the holiday gaiety, because, like we were saying earlier, that sense of imminent death has a reason for being there. It's actually, you know, very realistic. And then to have a faith that light's going to return, you have to have a sense of doom, or at least a glimmer of it, in order to have the opposite, which is a sense of rebirth.
Absolutely.
But, because people don't, they're not plugged into the meaning of it, so they just go out and party. And I think that the way they really feel inside, maybe instinctively, is so opposite what they're doing, that that's what creates depression.
That makes a lot of sense. It's almost as if you think you can party your way away from the holiday blues, but the fundamental dissatisfaction is still going to be there once the hangover lifts, you know.
And it makes it worse if you know, you've been doing the opposite of what your deep animal intelligence wants. But I also think that we have to grapple with mortality, Stephen, and in the old system of astrology, Capricorn was the planet of death,
mm-hmm,
before Pluto was sighted in the sky in 1930 and we got into the modern outer planets. Saturn, which rules Capricorn, were the symbols in astrology of dying and mortality, and it's still connected with aging. So that's another part of the letdown, like that you were talking about, that people all instinctively feel when Sagittarius moves to Capricorn.
Right. And you know, it's so interesting to me. I don't pretend to know much about Eastern religions, but I've heard about these Zen cones, which are sort of like little stories that contradict, that, you know, that have a riddle in them,
uh-huh,
designed to...
That's right.
And I think that in Western religions, Semitic religions like Judaism, Christianity, you know, I think they build in a lot of paradoxes and contradictions to do the same, to accomplish the same thing,
mm-hmm,
as the Zen cone. And one of these contradictions,
right,
is here we have Jesus, the Messiah, born in the sign of Saturn, the sign of the Capricorn goat. To me, that's just a big paradox.
Yeah, it is. There's also the point of view, though, you know, that it wasn't really the birth of Jesus so much as him being a Piscean figure, and that the church, the early church fathers, when they were trying to establish their version of Christianity as the only church in town, you know,
right,
as a power, as a political activity, they decided to use all this energy that had been circulating around the winter solstice for eons, and to sort of rename it as the birth of Jesus. So it was kind of a co-opting that was very probably deliberate, whereas you were saying earlier that Jesus is really more associated with the archetype of Pisces, not Capricorn at all.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're driving at. You're saying the early church fathers probably relocated the birthday to align it with the solstice.
Well, they had this tendency to do that with all the pagan festivals. You know, they had this pattern everywhere in the world of taking advantage of the particular turning points in the wheel of the year, like we were talking about, the seasonal juncture points that had been honored since time immemorial, with festivals and deep connection in the human spirit. And they converted these festivals into the new holidays like Easter and Christmas. And you know, they built their cathedrals on the same locations many times of those ancient ritual grounds. Have you ever heard that? Underneath the main cathedrals like Chartres and, well, all of them, the ones in England are the ones I'm most familiar with, they had, they will find burial mounds and prehistoric temples remains underneath the foundations of all these old churches in Europe. Because, once again, they were taking advantage of the fact that those places, even locationally, had built up associations over years and years with these sacred ideas.
It's very interesting. We can't escape from either the Christian idea of redemption in Jesus, or also the mythology of Capricorn, which I've read up about this before the show, actually has all of the Olympian gods fleeing from Typhon, and one of the gods, I want to say it was Pan, changes into a fish goat, and saves Zeus from being chopped up by Typhon. So there's again this sense of redemption, being saved. You know, I think it's very important to the holidays itself. What are your thoughts on this need to be saved, and how does it clash with the brawls that we see on Black Friday?
Yeah. That Typhon stuff is rich. I didn't realize there was an actual fish goat in that myth. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I ran across a whole... I mean, the mythology of Capricorn is so rich. There are a lot of different stories wrapped up in Capricorn, and Typhon, we see him appear here as well, and you know he's a really bad guy, you know.
From Typhoon,
so to speak.
I mean, that's the etymology of Typhoon, I imagine.
I would imagine that's so great. As well. I mean, he's sort of like the devil in the Hellenistic world, right, the Typhon?
It is, that's right, and you know, the Babylonian roots of the astrology that we practice in the West in modern times has these analogs in all these other spiritual traditions. Like you say, any society that had goats is going to, you know, use it as a symbol. And in the Western Hellenistic tradition, they got into goats as being licentious. And then that made him a good shoe-in for part of the symbolism of the devil when they got into the devil myth. So, yeah, but you have these universal roots, something that Joseph Campbell was proud to tell us, that, you know, these recurrent images come up. And redemption, yeah, it's one of them. And I think it has to do with what we were talking about before at its root, which is you can die, but you will be reborn.
Which That's beautiful.
The old pagan view didn't see, of course, in Christian terms at all. It saw it in terms of the natural processes that people would notice, observe all around them in nature, that things don't go away forever. There really isn't any permanent state at all, which is why the whole Christian idea of heaven and hell must have been such nonsense to the early people when they tried to shove Christianity down the throats of people who had been living in nature, and you know, they tried to explain to them that if you broke the church father's rules, you would go to this permanent state of punishment, and if you didn't, you'd go to this permanent state. The idea that it was static either way, heaven or hell was static and unchanging, completely violates the most essential tenet of nature, which is that everything changes.
Right, right.
And astrology, which is that everything keeps moving.
Absolutely.
So I think that there was a huge contrivance there that must have just seemed very weird to the pagans who were trying to be brought round.
There's another dichotomy that's interesting, too. The church figures, and this isn't just in Christianity, it's also in Islam, they see the heaven and hell split as being very carnal. Like you said, static, permanent, you know, but also very carnal. You're either going to get, you know, rivers of milk and honey, virgins, or you're going to get, you know, fire and brimstone. And
that's
I think
right.
also to the ancient mind, this was also a violation because Christmas says your material is going to evaporate into dust and start over again, but, you know, you're going to check out here.
You know, I think that's very, it's a very good point. That the natural world, I mean, the pagan who observed his animals giving birth in the spring and then dying and then using the hide and the hoofs and everything, every part of the animal afterwards, so that was a kind of rebirth. Everything got recycled. Pluto governs the idea of recycling. And so when I say Pluto's natural law, I'm talking about that business that really Einstein said in his way, that energy can never be created or destroyed, it just changes form.
Right.
And I think that way back before the three sky god religions took over and put their own trippy visions of how life worked, you know, tried to wipe out the more obvious natural understandings that everything in nature keeps moving, keeps getting recycled. You know how the church outlawed to even talk about reincarnation?
Yes.
It's so insane, isn't it, when you think about it in context, that it even made it a heresy to suggest that death itself was natural. If you suggested that death was a natural, inevitable thing, that was blasphemy. So talk about being out of touch.
Absolutely, and it's unnatural, to say the least. The ancient mind would have been repulsed by an idea such as that.
They must have just been baffled by a lot of these weird precepts that the church came up with. So I can't see it in any other way but that it was an enormous power play. If you can get people disbelieving suddenly in reincarnation and insist that, no, the truth is that you have to buy into our laws and go through a priest to do it, and you can't get saved from this everlasting torture unless you pay your tithes and do what we say. I mean, what a political coup that was.
Well, I tell you, Jessica, as we approach the end of our show here, I want to ask you about that favorite Dutch elf, and I want to know how all of this we're talking about sort of transformed into this Dutch elf who would do a B&E in your house. And I'm sorry, as we approach the end of the interview here, we still have an hour left of the show. But Santa Claus, what's up with Santa?
Well, it's hilarious the way you put it in context. Did you happen to see that Jon Stewart show on the Comedy Central last week about that?
I missed it. I like him, too.
He was referring to some Megan Fox. No, it's Fox News, but it was Megan Kelly or something. One of the Fox people was offended by what she considered a politically correct war on Christmas trip by suggesting that Santa was anything other than an old, fat, white man with a white beard. And she said, Santa is white. He just is. You can't change reality. John Stewart was saying, reality? Has anyone told Megan that he's a mess? Because Megan hadn't heard that one yet.
Well, we don't want to disparage Megan. We don't want to disrupt anybody's belief.
It depends on whose belief it is, right? She was saying, even if it makes people uncomfortable, you just have to accept Santa is white. And of course, Stuart was saying, it makes who uncomfortable? You don't care if people of color are made uncomfortable by that. So this points up the, you know, a response to your question, which is the reminder that cultures fashion pictures and stories that mimic whatever the dominant thought pattern is at the time.
And Santa's kind of like the godson, isn't he? An old white man with a big, long white beard.
Santa's the myth of choice.
Sort of the one that
has caught the collective imagination in this particular, very brief time, though. He hasn't been around that long. What is eternal, though, are the natural cycles. You know, kings can come and go, and religions can come and go, but nature is forever.
That's a comforting thought, absolutely a comforting thought, Jessica. And you know what? What better way to conclude than on that. Nature will endure, definitely. Jessica, I really wanted to thank you for coming on our show tonight. As always, it's a pleasure.
It's an absolute pleasure. A lovely way to celebrate the solstice.
Well, I hope you have a wonderful holiday season this year.
You too, Stephen. Everybody listening.
All right. Thanks again, Jessica.
You're welcome.
Okay, you can find out more about Jessica Murray at www.mothersky.com. And don't go away, folks. We have an entire second hour left here where you'll get to call in. But first, a few announcements here. Stay tuned for the second half to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper handy. If you are unable to catch last week's show on Quantum Time, you will find a recorded archive link. I advise you to go listen to that because that was Steve's show, and it was awesome. And you can find all the archives of all of our previous shows on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. Circulate those archive links and the future show details. We want to get out to as many of your friends as possible. It's our objective to connect with as many of you as possible, so share that link with others. Please be sure to visit our psychicbloggers.com site to learn about everything from reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from the list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and the Psychic Access team because of the high expectations required of each psychic advisor. All of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access, and if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. By the way, site owners and webmasters can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, invite your friends, join us in our chat room, listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everybody, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Okay, we've come to that part of the show where I get to hear the opinions of my co-hosts. Maureen, what did you think about our Christmas chat today?
I thought it was nice. It was very nice, and she's very, I love how she articulated. And also, you know, I really enjoyed listening to it. I was, it wasn't so much about me thinking, my thoughts about whatever. Everything she was talking about was just really flowing with, about how everything really just is and being. But, and also, you know, talking, she's a very intelligent woman, and not that anything was going over my head, but however, you know, she was bringing up some interesting things because, you know, I was raised a Catholic, Catholicism, and the way I was, she brought up something, but besides other things I identified with, of course, when it comes to Jung, unconsciousness and everything, you know, that stuff is just, you know, I just live by that. But when she was talking about, you know, the religious and all their, you know, propaganda or whatever back in the day, a long time ago day. But the way I always viewed it myself, you know, the pagans, like, it had all to do with the power, very much power. But I do feel that the Catholics, Catholicism, very power, very strong, very wealthy. You know, they came into the picture. And the thing of it is, I do feel that there was a lot of stuff going on where I feel that the leaders at the time, or the whatever you want to call it, the leaders of the religious leaders were threatened by others. So they went way ahead. You know, they were threatened by the tarot. They were anything was going on. Because I'm not saying I'm right or wrong about this, but the pagan, it all started. And that was a real direct reflection of the structure somewhat of the, you know, Catholics. Look at all right. The rituals they do. I mean, I went to Catholic school, but I take away from those candle burning, incense burning, yada, yada, yada. I mean, and they talked about magic. They talk about everything in there, too. And it's ironic because, you know, she was saying certain things, but they're the ones, you know, they're citing the Virgin Mary, and everything's really getting, you know, way out there now. Perhaps maybe there was a lot of reincarnation that was intertwined. They just kind of changed it as they went. So I really appreciated her knowledge and the way she spoke. very calming. And I don't even know if I make any sense now, but there, that's what I would say.
Well, one question that must be on everybody's mind, Maureen, is did you behave for Santa Claus this year? Are you going to get a lot of presents, or are you going to get a lump
no.
of coal? No.
This year I'm doing nothing. I am completely isolated. My daughter's in Thailand, and I'll tell you, you know what? To send my daughter something to Thailand, oh my gosh, it would cost $80 for a little box.
Oh my God.
Yes, 5 pounds. So she did said she sent me something, and going that way, it would be like $200 to send a care package. So I no.
Well, how's that going to work out for her doing Christmas in a tropical country like that?
Tropical country, yeah. You know what? She's okay. She was able to go to some celebration. They love, she has all the Christmas lights inside of her room, but, and the kids, she sent a video she took. She's teaching the kids how to sing Christmas. Oh, so sweet. She's teaching English to kindergartners to sixth grade.
That's awesome.
And, yeah, but they have a lot. She's, you know, they, whatever. But she's doing fine, the political. But, you know, yeah, I'm going to miss her. But, you know, I don't do Christmas. And actually, it's not going to cost me
much. No, that's nice.
And, I'm on my big family. I'm not going to do their little extravagante. I know. I'm not a Bahunga, but, yeah, I am one of those people that have issues during the holidays. And I used to love it when we had Hanukkah. My grandfather was, my mother was Jewish. Converted, but the one side I used to get Hanukkah gifts and Christmas, when I was younger.
That is awesome.
That was really fun time. And I'll tell you, I went to Catholic school, but the mother's Jewish, the children Jewish, and it was fun. And that was really actually it was very nice because those are the best major two traditional big religions in the world. But yeah, so your guest was lovely, Stephen. I really appreciate you having her come on. I think it was a very authentic, unique, and very well. It was very well received in the chat room interview. I liked it a lot.
Oh, how nice! Well, that means a lot to me, Maureen.
Well, thank yourself.
All right. Well, Carmen, what did you think about tonight's interview?
Well, I want to say thank you for the astrology lesson.
Sure.
And just for those, I started learning just by listening to people like you just talk for hours and hours and hours. And my insights would be that, and stay with me because it's what I perceive about what we have is a Capricorn, Pluto, and was that a Uranus trine, was it?
Right. No, this is going to be a square, a 90
a square.
Degree.
Okay.
Right.
So that is just scaring me because, Uranus, especially in its awesome humanitarian form, is taking on a technological aspect.
Right.
Yet it's coming into a very severe and conservative Capricorn, which then is rooted by the long, slow-moving 250-day Pluto.
Right.
Ellipse. I am just so scared because I always equated the internet, like the electronic freedom frontier, as
right.
the place of open minds and where I now see this very much occurring, but to an utmost extreme, to the extremes that I see, all of these ideals are becoming rigid and grounded, conformist. Orwellian is the latest word, and extremely, what would one say?
Draconian.
Draconian, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, for all that ideas have opened up, people don't take them well, and I'm wondering when this cycle is going to end, or if it's going to continue, if we've just given rise to a very difficult new concept of a very slow-moving kind of violent revolution as opposed to a happy let's overthrow just the bad people. My concern is that we are the bad people too, our
right.
companies and corporations, our banks, the systems, the designers, the programmers, we are part of that system, so we can't really push that onto the utter absolute, the plutocracy. So that is what I took from this very interesting discussion. Thank you so much. I mean,
well, sure.
I don't know if could you enlighten me a bit on how long this is going to take?
this is, well, it's going to be a pretty long-running influence because the nature of these planets are such that their orbits are very, very slow. But the good news is that there is definitely some cause for hope, because Mars is going to be more inclined towards behaving himself, I'm thinking, because he's in the sign of Libra, a sign that is going to want to harmonize. And so the interesting thing is that the sort of the rebellious tendencies symbolized by Mars are going to really, I expect them to take the form more of protests. They're going to be, you know, fairly bloodless, but certainly there are also going to be some violent insurgencies as well, because that's just the way the world has been. But that Uranus is currently in the 10th house right now, speaking from the point of mundane astrology. So that's, you know, sort of like the internet in the government, you know, the internet being used to expose the machinations of the government, you know, and it's in the sign of Aries, very aggressive about doing that. So, you know, I think that's really how the rebellion is going to manifest itself. You're going to have groups like Anonymous, you know, and things like that. That's what I think.
What is the 10th house?
The 10th house is the government, essentially. It's a very public type of house in the sense that everybody is very visible what goes on in that house, and it represents the king, the monarch, the government, you know, so it would represent our government and the governments of the world as well. So.
Fascinating. So that's what I took from that Christmas message, is like, top of the year, folks, and we're in for a long ride.
Yeah,
and
it's going to set the tone for the year.
It's about old ideas coming up in a new format, in a new form, in a
Absolutely.
New embodiment. So well, don't be seduced is the message, I feel. Anyway,
that is
Merry
message.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. I certainly hope you get over your flu. I hope you're feeling better soon here.
Oh, thanks, eh? Yeah, I'm just here, cozy, indoors with y'all.
Outstanding. Well, Steve, my fellow astrologer, what did you think about the interview tonight?
Well, I loved it, but you know I love anything that Jessica does. I think she's fascinating, and she's a very smart lady.
She is. And you know, you actually introduced us, so thank you very much for that. She's opened my eyes towards a lot of things.
You're welcome. She's very much worth listening to.
Well, how are you doing this Christmas season? What's Christmas like for you this year?
Well, I'm just working away, and I'll probably prepare Christmas on the 24th, like usual.
Now, you have a lovely Christmas custom. Would you mind sharing that, or is that too private? With the you invite people into your home, don't you, for Christmas?
I do normally, but I'm not this year. I'm going to Nashville, actually.
Oh, you're going to Nashville.
I'm going to stay with a friend in Nashville, yeah.
I see. Well, I certainly hope that you definitely have a very good time, whatever you choose to do. What did you think about Jessica's commentary regarding Pluto and the Mars transit activating that and all that good stuff?
Well, I find it very interesting. And I think the interesting thing about the US charts, well, the Sibley charts, there are actually three US charts. There are two that are commonly used, but there is actually a third. But Pluto in the natal Sibley chart is in the House of Finances, the second house, as you know, under the sign of Capricorn. And the US economy has been very much driven by things Plutonian, so plutocracy and oil. And I concur with Jessica when it comes to oil, in that I think that oil is ruled by Pluto in astrology rather than Neptune.
Right.
So you've got that Pluto, that retrograde Pluto, somehow ruling the House of Finances. And if you look at the chart, transiting Pluto is in Capricorn. It's at 10 degrees Capricorn, and it's right on the cusp now of the second house of the US chart. And you know, Stephen, that the cusp is the most powerful point in the charts.
Yes.
Or of each house. So you get quite significant impacts when you're looking at a planet transiting over or progress to the cusp. So it's hugely significant, because the US chart's been there since 1776, obviously, 4th of July. And now we've got transiting Pluto right on that cusp, stirring things up with regard to finances and the economy. And it's in an approach, basically, to a Pluto return, which is very rare, because if you think it takes about, I think, 248 years for Pluto to cycle right. the zodiac. So this will be the US's Pluto return in the House of Finances, no less. And when I look at the progressions in the US chart for the next, well, I look at it for the next 20, 30 years, but particularly I'm drawn to the end of 2016 and into 2017, and I feel that that's when we're going to really feel economic turmoil more than we experienced in 2008, in my opinion, because I don't feel that we took the pain. I feel that we just took a pill.
Right.
And the approach of Pluto to the country's natal Pluto indicates that something very significant needs to shift in terms of the way we manage our finances and our economy. The other thing that's interesting is that the eighth house, which is to do with debt, the US sun in the Sibley chart is in the eighth house of debt. Mm-hmm. And when you progress the chart to look at the energies now, Jupiter, the ruler of Sagittarius, or the planet of exaggeration, of good fortune, but also of excess, is progressed on top of the sun in the house of debt, indicating that, you know, we're, the essence of the nation is largely now associated with excess and debt. And that's all part and parcel of this picture, because as Pluto moves into the House of Finances, it will oppose exactly the natal sun of the US and then that progressed Jupiter. And you know, Steve, when you look at a chart, you could talk about it for hours and hours on end because there's so right. much to see. But I don't like to be a scaremonger. I believe that the power of metaphysics is to look beyond the physical domain, the mundane realities of life, and actually see what's truly occurring within the entity and right. on the astral plane, because astrology shows us what's occurring on the astral plane and what we'll download into the physical world. So I think that these are all warning signs that we need to get our act together. And I'm not sure that we're going to do it, but I certainly feel a responsibility to get my act together personally, because as we progress towards 2016 and particularly the end of that year into 2017, there are going to be quite some challenges to manage our way through.
Well, speaking of good fortune, Steve, let me just pause to hand out the call-in number for readings. We'd ask you to call in about 6 or 7 minutes or so. That number is 724-444-4851. Again, that number is 724-444-4851. And we ask that you restrict your question to one question. Please make it very clear and specific. Thank you very much. Okay, Steve, you were saying you don't want to be a scaremonger, but unfortunately, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, however, I think. I'm not a scaremonger. I think I have faith that things will work themselves out.
No tunnels. Sorry. No tunnels.
We have a guest coming in on the 2nd. She sounds like a very wonderful, positive lady. She studied in Geneva. She studied with many astrologers. Yes, she did her dissertation on Jungian archetypes. And she's written a few books, and she's a shamanic astrologer. But she's an astrologer. She's coming in specifically to tell us about. She sounds like a phenomenally positive lady about her predictions for us. So, for sure, that's going to be something that's going to come up in the new year. And it's interesting when you speak to different astrologers, right? You get so many different viewpoints.
It certainly is. You know, we could always, you know, learn and become expanded by interacting with other astrologers. So I'm going to be looking forward to that show, definitely, without a doubt. And again, just to make sure, you guys, to get the number to call in is 724-444-4851. Go ahead and light those phones up. We want to hear from you, absolutely. Again, just one call, one question per call, please, so that we can get to everybody who are in the queue. So, Carmen, you say that the shamanic astrologer will be your guest coming on.
Yes, her name is Michelle Caron. And so she has done a lot of initiation rites with Peruvian shaman, and she has she seems like a deeply spiritual person. She has studied with a lot of spiritual masters, but also like Linda Goodman, for example, too. So she's published some books through Simon & Schuster, and yeah, you're going to figure out, I guess,
wow,
it's going to be like a very self-indulgent hour of asking a lot of these questions. And probably one of the things she just wants to bring out is the sense I got from her was a message of peace and positivity. And so right. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. I used to live in Peru for a long time, so to hear her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to hear her commentary about the Peruvian spirituality, especially as it pertains to astrology, that's going to be very interesting. You know, I would have some questions for sure about the Nazca figures. You know, that's one really exciting aspect of South American spirituality to me.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be learning all about this now. You know, that's one of the thing about our program is I'm doing crash courses and studying all of this. It's quite fascinating. Some very learned people out there. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, just to frame this off, do you guys actually like Santa?
I've got no problem with Santa.
No, you like, you think he's in your groove? Okay.
Santa's chill with me. He's getting a lot of bad press this year. It's popular to diss on Santa, but, you know, anybody who can burgle that many homes without getting caught, he's, you know, two thumbs up over here. You know, what do you think about Santa Claus, Steve?
I love it when he brings me presents.
Yeah, you love it when he brings you presents?
I love it especially when he actually looks at my Amazon wish list, which is specifically designed to tell people what I want. But no one seems to think of that. My reading list is on there.
There's something about Santa that's downright cult-like. When I was a little boy, I actually busted my parents assembling my toys, and I continued to believe religiously in Santa for 2 years after that. So he's got a special magnetic charm about him.
Okay. Did you ever hear? Did you ever see the Saturday SNL skit John Malkovich? I love him. Did for these kids about really what Santa? If it was true, okay. If it was true that he really was able to go, and he goes, that would mean that he would have to be going 20 million miles an hour. That means he would blow up, kids. He goes, and do you know this? He goes, if Santa, and he was just ripping it apart.
You know what, Maureen? I think it's quantum Santa.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah, and it's fun. And it's funny. But, you know, I like using Santa as a way for me to say everything I would mark down, I'd add an extra gift to my parents or my daughter. Santa, Santa, you know, from Santa, Santa. It wasn't just about me giving gifts, so I like to use that on my own best, you know.
Did that bother you to surrender some of your gift-giving authority to Santa Claus?
No, I enjoyed it. I like that. I like that.
I think that would irritate me.
No, why? Because you want to be all giving all the credit?
Yeah, yeah. If I were a parent, I'd be like,
go to counseling. Yeah. People like you.
I probably do need some counseling, but there would be a part of me that would want to say, dude, Santa Claus didn't do that. You know, Daddy put in overtime at the factory for that.
I praise it all, but no, I like putting Santa down, and also known as me, but I wouldn't say that part yet.
He has been getting a lot of bad press lately. I wonder why that is.
Because he's been Weight Watchers, and he's getting healthy, as we all should.
I'm hating that. I'm seeing Santa's doing workouts in all those ads, and he's drinking with his beer buddies. Have you noticed that? It's getting way too intimate for me. You know, next thing we're going to have, like, Santa pharmaceutical ads, and I don't want to do this. Like, I cannot see Santa becoming liberated or modernized. I want him to be fat and quaint and pudgy and kind of stupid, just like he always was.
We can use Santa to sell a lot of things, though, right? I mean, doesn't he kind of get pimped out like that to sell things? Just about everything. Yeah, he'll sell everything from dog food to Triscuits to whatever.
Yeah, I like
the
old
Santa net.
I like the old commercials from the 60s and 70s, you know, when Santa was, you guys are too, well, yeah, you're all you youngsters here with me, I love you. But I love those commercials in the 60s, before you were born. And they had some cool, and it was like really high tech at the time, but he'd be cruising around those little electric razors you'd get for the father, you know, for your husband. And they were just like classics. If anybody out there is knowing what I'm talking about, Julie, you might know out there, I don't know. But just classics. They were really like, he's cruising around in razor on on a razor blade. Anyway, and all the, you know, appliances a woman would want at that time. You know, those are the best gifts they're giving. But
yeah.
See, I like the Tooth Fairy. She's cool. I always think she probably wears really cool clothes.
I think she's a nice, kind, generous, and I was a good Tooth Fairy. I would do trills and that. And then my daughter and I, I hand her $20, give it back to me. I like the Tooth Fairy, too. You know, really, the Tooth Fairy and Santa are interrelated.
I thought you were about to say they're in a relationship. I was about to say, wow.
They're interrelated.
The soap opera aspects of Christmas.
Well, for you guys, I'm having a wisdom tooth removed on the 7th of February, which is a very auspicious day for me astrologically, and your check should be payable to Stephen Frampton.
I'll be thinking about
Tooth Fairy check, says.
I'll be at Gettysburg. You know, it'll be okay to really make it, really give you some really good stuff for that. You wake up laughing. I did.
Yeah,
when you do send your Tooth Fairy checks, just remember that I have adult expenses now.
Big boy. It'll put your big boy panties on and you'll be fine.
Yeah, it hasn't worked so far.
Oh, Steve, I remember when I had mine. I'll be in Gettysburg at that time, I'm pretty sure I'm going.
Where's Gettysburg? Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's where the battlefield of Gettysburg, remember, the big...
Oh, okay.
So I'll just fly over as a Tooth Fairy. I'll just pretend I'm there. Wisdom teeth for us. Your mom's wishes she was here. Well, we'll send Santa over. Santa will come over spring break.
I grew up with
moved on the day before New Year's Eve.
Really? Well, yeah. Wait, Steve, your birthday's come up, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Yes, like Capricorn, is here we come. We'll have some popcorn with Capricorn. Yeah. Capricorns are just lovely. And, you know, I know you two guys think you're really hotsy-totsy, and you are. You are. You really are.
We try our best, Maureen.
No, you are. And I know this. Stephen, I've gotten you to really – I really put you in the corner to do some stuff for me. And you did. And it was really rude what you said about him.
Oh, wow.
But, I would think it would be fascinating to have you each do what you're do something for each other, you and Steve, even and have an astrology like barbecue cook-off.
You know what? We're going to have to collaborate on that. That's a lovely idea. But in the meantime, Carmen actually has a caller from New York. Carmen?
Hello. Hi. So my caller? Hello. Good evening. New York is coming through. It's probably bottlenecked at this point because there's so many people. Hello?
Wait for it.
Lightning speed. That's okay. We can continue on and we'll wait for her to connect. She might actually break in.
New York not there? Okay. We're going to try to get New York back. So just hang in there, New York. We're going to get you on the line here.
And we'll see.
Okay. You know what? I believe New York is there.
New York. Oh, New York? Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for coming through. We're all really breathlessly awaiting your arrival. Nice to meet you.
I didn't know, you know.
That's okay. What's your name?
My name is Mary.
Hi, yes, you're in the chat room. How are you, Mary? What can I do for you tonight? What's your question?
Question is, I have a real, real bad relationship with my son. And, you know, he's a pretty old adult himself, and he does some pretty nasty things right now, you know, to me. And he lives with a woman who doesn't like me, and you know, you can't call him up, and she says things that are mentally ill, you know. And he just acts terrible to me, and I'm wondering if it'll ever straighten out.
Oh, so you live with them?
No.
Okay. Let's see.
He does, like, insulting things to me, and
like what?
You know, I get burnt up then, you know, like, okay, the other day was my birthday, and he brought me I told him I wanted a certain thing, but he brought me a stale pastry. I flung it at him. I said, you know, I never asked for anything specific, but this year I did. And he was, you know, and he bought me a lot of tickets. And he said, ha ha. And I took it as an insult.
Is this just lately, do you think?
Well,
that it's getting worse, or has he always had that?
It's getting worse since he's been living with this woman. And okay. She is evil. She's involved with drug dealing and doing everything against the law. And she's kind of like influencing my son a lot more. And he's a big dummy, you know? And I don't like it. You know, I didn't raise him.
How old is he?
Jesus, he's 45.
Okay. You know, it just seems to me like you probably at this point need to let him go into his abusive relationship fully, because it must hurt him to hurt you, and not and continue to question and query. It's not wrong what you're asking, but you have to just, you probably need to start working on getting a support system for yourself, because I don't know if this is going to change very soon. You could have maybe another year of this, and that means that your relationship could sustain some damage. So, you know, I feel like to some extent, you know, you have a right to be able to talk to someone about this and make sure that, you know, you feel safe as well. It seems to me like you're feeling a little bit intimidated. And so, you know, one day he's going to get hurt from his friends, by his friends. They're going to stab him in the back or hurt him, you know, hurt his feelings. And that might, unfortunately, be one of the reasons why he has to leave this woman. But it's a cruel way for him to get there, a lot of disappointment, and you'll probably care about him all that way. And where's his father?
Father lives in North Carolina, and, you know, he had remarried, and he has other children, and they don't really talk too much.
Yeah, you know, it's frightening and it's awful, and I think that it's almost like a half century that you've known your son. You have to put that in this perspective of probably that, and it's also an awe-inspiring and scary situation, and also people are very stressed out right now. And I think that most people are characterized are becoming a lot more challenging. So in terms of him, sort of still, he'll still keep dropping by. He will still keep kind of visiting. That's his way of paying attention. But it might make him feel worse. So if you can get some supports to try and stay away from him a little bit, that will be helpful for you as well. Because I don't think it's making him feel very good.
No. It's really now, it's, you know, it's upsetting, because I wouldn't do the things to anybody, you know, the way they are, because she acts the same way, you know. When he first met her, she left a big bag of dirty Kotex behind my couch, because I had, you know, at the time he had access to my apartment, and he was bringing her there, and it was such an insult, you know, and he told me I must have put it there. I said, how could I? I had a hysterectomy years ago. You know, I don't have a period. She just does nasty things, you know, and, you know, she told him she doesn't want him, you know, around me, or, you know, if I need any help, not to give it and things like that. And,
you know, my goodness. I mean, though, this is really going to be about older families getting to know each, continuing on and over time. And I've found that you're not the only. This is the structure. They sometimes they sort of degenerate as people get crankier, and you have to distance yourself from them, because I feel like this is not going to get better without you. Them sensing that, you know, you're at their mercy. And that's the problem, is they sense that, you know. So it's like a matter of, you know, they re-victimize you, and then you know, of course you feel upset, and then they don't like themselves, and then they go in for the little bit more. So in a way, you're doing them a favor by cutting them off. And it's a very difficult thing to do, yeah. And I would recommend doing it over small periods of time. Like if you're cutting off a friend or a family member, you just do a little bit at a time. Like, you know, 3 days less chatting a week, or don't answer every call. And over months or years, you'll distance yourself, and you'll grow stronger. It does happen, you know.
Thank you.
Well, you take care of yourself, and stay safe. And sorry to hear that. You know, I'd love to have a little chat with that man.
You know, I didn't raise him to be or do things that he's doing. You know, and that's what I think hurts the most out of the whole thing.
I know. You know, that's the thing. Well, you tried your best. You put in your best effort. And irrespective of that, you know, at least you're conscious that of what is good and bad. And
oh, thank God.
Mary. Oh, thank you. Anyway, you take good care, hey? Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much. Okay, take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Carmen, thank you very much for that. Now, Steve, we have a caller for you from North Carolina.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from North Carolina?
Hi, this is Catherine.
Hello, Catherine. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, Catherine. Thank you. How can I help?
I've been dating the same guy for over a year now. And he's been separated from his wife for a couple of years. It seems like he has a lot of communication with her still. And I just wonder if he still has, you know... Like, I feel we still have feelings for her. I'm not sure if we have a future together.
You're not sure if you should be together?
Yeah.
Let me see. I feel, you know, the thing that comes up for me is financial entanglements. Are you sure they don't have some financial things that they still have to... deal with? I'm not seeing that they're in. I'm not seeing that they're in love with each other. I do feel that there are some issues or challenges to be dealt with in your relationship with him, and we'll come on to that in a minute. But focusing upon your question about him and his ex-wife, I don't feel that they're in love, but I do see some financial involvement.
Yeah, as far as I know, they've settled all that.
Have you asked him why he has contact with her?
I have. He just said it's no big deal, and I've asked him to stop, and he won't. He just continues talking to her and going by her house.
Yeah. Well, you see, I honestly don't feel that they're going to get back together or that there's a relationship going on there. But I do feel that there are some issues in your relationship with him. So if you, for a moment, almost try to forget that he's speaking to his ex-wife and going to her house, the issue is more communication and... The dynamic between you and him. In other words, you saying to him that something bothers you and him not really listening or respecting your feelings.
Yeah.
And that seems to be actually the core of the problem in your relationship from what I see and what my guides show me. I feel that there's just this dynamic between the two of you of tension and... maybe even lack of compatibility, to be honest with you. So there's this distance between the two of you, and I wouldn't focus so much on the ex-wife. I would focus on you and him and the dynamic between the two of you. I feel like the relationship was really good and really fun particularly for 2 months, maybe three. But then I feel that as you got into the third month and beyond, you started to sense that there were some challenges here or some question marks over the dynamic with him. And that was before this whole scenario with the ex-wife. So I actually feel that your issue is compatibility and the dynamic with him, and whether you feel this is a dynamic and a relationship that can make you both happy. And I feel that it probably can't. What do you think?
I really don't feel respected, or I just don't feel like he listens to anything I say or cares, really.
Yeah, so that's what you have to address with him. I think you need to write, you need to sit down with a piece of paper and write down what's working well in the relationship, without sort of taking sides, you know, you're doing this wrong and etc. Write down what are your expectations of a wonderful relationship. Almost brainstorm the ideal relationship for you, and then benchmark this relationship as it is against that list. And then you've got to consider, well, how was it versus this list? So was it really wonderful at one point, and could it go there again or not? And then you've got to look out to the future and consider whether you can make this relationship the relationship you really want to spend your life in, and have that discussion with him. But I feel like that's what you've got to focus on. It's not so much the ex-wife. It's more just the dynamic between the two of you. I'm not excusing his behavior. If he's not respecting your feelings, that's a problem. But that's the problem. Right. It's the understanding of each other, and the dynamic between the two of you, the compatibility. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I do feel that my guides give me the month of April, to be honest with you. I feel as though you'll have ironed this out by April. So whatever you choose, you'll have made that decision beginning of March, actually, and then in April, you'll really know where you are. I know it's tough, because you're a really loving girl. And I know you've got a lot to offer, so think about that. Listen back to the audio, the archive of the show. And, you know, I always say to people, you have to be your number one. You have to be your best friend. You have to be your coach, your cheerleader, your mentor, your own parent, your own advisor. You have to love yourself. You have to be really in love with yourself and have your self-esteem so high that you want the very best, and that's what you seek out, and it helps you to make really good choices. And also it helps you alchemically to magnetize great things into your life. So I feel as though you've got to go away and reflect a little on your self-esteem, but also this vision that you have for a relationship. Because you've got to get clear about your expectations and then benchmark where you're at. And that will help you make the right communications and work your way through things. Okay?
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
You'll know where you are in April, all right? So be strong and look after yourself. And remember, fall in love with yourself.
Right.
Good luck.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
You too.
Thank you very much, Steve, for that wonderful reading. Thank you. Okay, we have Maureen, Missouri.
Yes, you do. Hello, Missouri. This is Maureen. Hello. Hi. Hello. I know you. I know I'll hear someone pretty soon. Wait for it. Hello, Missouri.
Hello.
Hi, there you are. Hi. May I have your name, please?
Christina.
Christina, hi. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. And what can I help you with?
I would like to know about this guy named Joe, your soul and seeing, I'm talking to.
Okay, I don't know if I heard you. You want to know about it? I'm sorry, because I kind of lost the sound. Is a little crinkly. You would like to know about a guy, and you said after that, what did you say after that part?
I just want to know about this guy.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay, well, that's something. Just another guy. You know, us women get awfully fed up with that, don't we? That's all. Okay. Are you, I mean, I'm wondering, this is a guy, obviously, that's somebody that you lost patience with. You know, it does look like recently what I'm getting, I'm seeing, is that you've been extremely patient and you're exhausted from this whole thing. It's like almost like you're not seeing, you know, on the day, the fruits of your labor. You've put a lot of energy into or vested interest. Do you know, I want to ask you something. Is there something... You know, I do feel there's a common feeling that for you, and I feel as well for him, but having a hard time connecting, like you want a conventional, orthodox relationship. You know what I mean? You don't want an unconventional one. You want something. And I'm going to ask you this. Have you two been going, had you two go back, not you so much, but has he detached when things get a little bit too... momentum going in a direction? Like I said, you've been very patient, more so than with his shenanigans. It's not shenanigans. He needs to grow up a bit and step it up. But you know, I just feel like I'm not seeing him right now, and I usually do get the faces. But what I am seeing is that I see it coming. It seems like a far away, but it looks like around August. You're heading in a direction, and I do feel he's part of this. But he's sorting out some of his own work or career goals, and where he feels more stable. And I do see that moving forward. But I do see a new residence, a change of residence, a home-like feeling, and. So I don't know your background, and I don't, you know, you didn't really ask me directly what you wanted to know. So I actually should have asked you that, because it's easier for me to help you that way, because I get so much stuff, your head would spin. So are you asking me if there's a possibility that the situation between you two will sort itself out and come?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
will we get better? Like, will we get closer?
Will he be more dependable? And there, yeah. You know, so the thing of it is, I do feel within the next 4 months, and when I give a time frame like that, I want you to know something. I'm not saying you're going to have to wait 4 months. I'm seeing a block of 4 months. I do feel that things have not been really active or eventful between you two. I do see it taking a really positive turnaround. I do see him pursuing something in his work or business. I see him in a new location. I feel he's really trying to be all he can be, and needing to be. That's not to say he should just detach from you, but I do see him moving forward in a really good way. I do see a woman around here that's not all that positive, and I suggest she's just a thorn, kind of interfering. She's just a mess, and nobody is good to bring in interfering in your relationship. But I do feel that you two are moving, and the burden is on your back a bit, but I do feel that you have a lot to look forward to. I see him really stepping it up, and I do see a very conventional relationship. I'm not saying overnight, but by in the summer months since 2014, I feel there's a lot of real interesting new agreements for you two. I would hang in there.
Okay.
With boundaries, but I'd hang in there.
Okay.
Okay, I hope I helped you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Maureen. And I believe I have a call from Virginia. Hello, who am I speaking with in Virginia? Hello, Virginia.
Hello?
Hi, who am I speaking with?
Laura.
Laura. How may I help you tonight, Laura?
I was just trying to find, get like a reading on... a relationship. We're not dating, but I mean, he knows how I feel about him, and I was just trying to find out if there's ever going to be anything between us.
Okay. Will there ever be anything between them? The way things are going right now, it's not looking too good for a romance to develop quite yet. Definitely not right now. In fact, the reversed Ten of Scepters says that he has a lack of enthusiasm for relationship right now. But really, going forward, the chances increase. They get a little bit better. The Seven of Cups, in fact, downright promises that there'll be some sort of emotional
liaison or meeting between the two of you? Do you see some sort of activity undertaken based upon emotional affection and things of that nature? Now, as to whether it will lead to a permanent, secure relationship, I can't be confident that that will actually happen. So about the best I can do here is say that I see that there will be romantic contact that will at first seem very positive, but I would expect there to be some difficulties after that, do you see? So certainly for the next few weeks, maybe even going into 2013, next couple of months, I wouldn't really expect any positive result out of him. He might not even seem all that interested in you. But as we get into the springtime, that should change, believe it or not. It'll actually be rather mysterious to you. However, I wouldn't trust it, do you see, because the good things will probably, you know, likely his enthusiasm will go in the opposite direction again. Do you see what I'm saying, Laura? I hate to be a negative Nelly here.
He's not
going to
be interested.
No, ma'am, not in a significant relationship. Now, again, in the springtime, early springtime, I do see him flirting with you and wanting to spend some time with you, but he's going to change his mind even beyond that. Do you see? It could be he wants some sort of fuel for his narcissism or his ego or something. He could be trying to get something out of you, even if it's just some sort of, you know, emotional satisfaction just for the moment or whatever. But again, I wouldn't expect it to go beyond that really significantly.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying, Laura? I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah.
You know, just the best thing you can do is just sort of keep your head up and just remain detached as to, you know, to accept any possibility. You want to watch your emotions getting too attached to this gentleman too quickly. That above all else, if you don't take away anything from our time together tonight on the phone, I'd like you just to remember that. Just to guard your emotions from getting too attached to this gentleman, okay? So,
that's,
you know, that's what you, that's what you need to watch out for. Ma'am?
That's right.
Yeah. It's for the best, really. You'll thank yourself for guarding your emotions later. Trust me, okay? You really will.
Great. You know, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling. Have a good night, okay?
You too.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay. I don't think we have any more callers. Those who are interested in getting that free on-air reading, that number again is 724-444-4851. And we do have a call for Carmen, I believe, from California.
Hello. Hi. Carmen speaking. Nice to meet you. What's your name?
Hi there. It's Mary.
Hi, Mary. Nice to meet you. Well, what can I do for you tonight?
Just had a question regarding work. Just wondering if you see me changing jobs in the near future. I feel there's so much negative energy while I'm working right now and need a change.
Oh, goodness, yes. So what do you do?
I'm in the travel industry.
Okay, let me have a look here. Yeah, you know, it says here you're shouldering a lot of the responsibility of having people that don't communicate with you. And it says here, this is for some time. You've been there for some time. And it says here, more than likely, they're undecided as to what to do right now, so you're actually needed. So that's how they're going to keep you in there, because in a way, you know, you're going to be given additional responsibilities. You could leave for another opportunity. You may be offered another opportunity, but it may be disappointing, and it may be with your competition. So study your competition and keep an eye out for their hiring. It seems to me that you're looking at a very good offer here that may actually occur. And it says here, after a meeting with several responsible parties, these parties are in accounting or finances, these people will probably help you get into another job or position. Again, at the other company. So I'm thinking that you're going to have one offer that's subpar. And then you've got one that's all right, possibly, but you're going to get a stellar offer here in the end. But it's possibly a smaller company. And they are putting a lot of investment. So that one of the things you need to look for is just, the definite winners as opposed to anybody that's struggling. Those are the ones that will be clear. So I'm quite positive that does look like a fairly good outcome for you. Are you looking for work right now?
I am looking around, just waiting for the right opportunity. And
yeah, first time of year for that, right now. Like, don't. If you can afford the luxury not to look right now and to frustrate yourself and depress yourself, up until about mid next month, you know, that's when the market's really open up.
Yeah, like, I see opportunities. It's just the pay. You know, I don't want to take a huge pay cut.
No, in the end, you're going to be okay. I think stable, same. The main thing is like, you know, you could get into a more interesting job. And it does say here, you know, there's some projects. I think that you'll be given a lot of responsibility for the level of work that you're doing. So maybe that is, in a way, a pay cut, because if you're given increased responsibilities and you're getting paid the same, well, essentially you're utilizing more of yourself. So I see that, but your financial income seems stable, and you do get another opportunity, and so it's going to seem obvious and natural, and I would probably just sort of hunker down and wait for that, and you're in a good industry for that. One of the things, though, is that I do know that there's going to be some changes coming in your industry. So it does say here that responsibility-wise, it says here, stick to whatever you can to keep your money right now, because you're going to be with a good job where you are right now, like, if you can. I don't know what your work situation is like, you know, Mary, but I bet you it's bad, and I'm sure everybody's told you to tough it out, and I know how bad they are right now. It's pretty desperate out there, so you just keep take a break, essentially, for the next couple weeks. That's my prescription, and then get back to, you know, that's 2 weeks off. You'll probably get some offers, and you know what, in this market, I'm glad to see you are, and people still are getting work, but it's a lot slower.
I'm looking to do something different, like I'm looking to do a job, like a career change too. So
what career?
No, I was thinking, you know, doing something completely different, like getting into a different industry altogether.
I wouldn't recommend that right now. That's what I felt, like stability would be the best. It did say that. But that would be right now, meaning just over the next 2 to 6 months.
Okay.
I know, you know, and life is long, and you should be given the opportunity to change careers, and it's not saying you won't. But for the most part, it just says stability for now, if possible. And that means staying within your industry. And it possibly means you're going to get a fairly decent offer with, you know, an upstart competitor, somebody. But that, you know, so just, it's all for a reason. And keep going away for your new job. But I don't see that, I mean, for the career change, I don't see that in the next, like, 2 months, you know. Obviously. Okay. Yeah. But you never know, right? But it's just like, well, this is, you know, a very brutal market. So you just got to keep, you know, at it. And don't, best people right now are going through the same thing. So you take good care, and you'll be fine, actually. You're going to get that A job, and you're not losing any money in your reading. And that means that you don't see any financial loss, you know? That's awesome. That's excellent. And, like, no loss markers. Yeah, hey, you're welcome, Mary. Well, you take good care, and good luck.
Happy holidays.
I wish you the best.
Yeah. You know? Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Thank you very much, Carmen. Steve, you have a call from South Dakota.
Thank you, Stephen. Hello. Who's calling?
Hello, Steve.
Hi.
My name is Maida, and I have a question for you about a past situation. And so it's kind of made me nervous. So I would like you to tell me whether it was a warning, it was, you know, just nothing, or was a message. My husband got up in the middle of the night to have a snack, and he was up by himself, and then a voice said, "Someone's coming." So he just looked out the big front window, and there was a
vehicle pulling up, pulling kind of around the corner. So he went in the back room to get dressed, and when he come back, it was gone. So the next day, there was tire tracks. And then the next night, he was in the garage, and it was earlier in the evening, around 9 o'clock, and then he could hear a vehicle pulling up. He could hear the snow crunching. And so then he waited a little bit, and then he went out, and the vehicle was not there. And the next day, he could see where the vehicle had pulled in and left. And it's made me kind of uneasy, particularly since, you know, it was like a warning. A voice said, someone's coming. So I'm wondering, you know, what was going on. Was it a warning? Was it information? Was it just nothing? What do you get from that?
Well, I do feel that your husband is sensitive to spirits. I do feel that he's got a good connection, that he can tune into to spirits. Yeah. I don't feel that you're at risk, to be honest. I feel that, well, I'm looking at the cards as well. I've pulled some cards to just look at the situation, but I don't feel that you're at risk. How long ago was this?
About 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so I was going to talk with you guys last week, and then something happened, and I couldn't. And so I didn't know whether we were going to be set up to, you know, to be robbed or something, or whether it was I just had a nephew pass on with his own making, and there was a lot of turmoil. So I don't, you know, I'm trying.
Was your nephew in quite a lot of trouble before his passing?
I don't know. I didn't really know him. He lived in another state.
Okay, so he wasn't somebody that was near to you or staying in your home or anything like that?
No.
No. I mean, honestly, I feel like your husband's got a gift. I wouldn't obsess over it because, you know, the more you worry about it, the more you're going to just become unsettled. I feel like it would be sensible for you to think about security at your home and to think about whether there's anybody that may be wanting to cause you a problem. But I don't feel that you need to obsess over it. Have you ever called Psychic Access for the free reading?
No, I haven't.
Well, what I'm going to suggest to you is, and I don't normally suggest this, but we always say that clients can call, listeners can call, and always get their free 6-minute reading. What I'm going to say to you is this. If you log on to Psychic Access and create an account, it doesn't cost you anything, then you can have a free 6-minute reading. And I would be more than happy to look in more detail at what's going on with you and what's going on with your husband, and to do that, including astrology and a couple of other things, to really thoroughly look at whether there's any risk. Because, you know, I don't want to say to you that you should just ignore it, because if you're concerned, then I think we should check, and you should do all the logical things, like making sure your home security is good and thinking about whether there's anybody that might want to cause you a problem. That's just logical stuff to do under these circumstances. And I'd be more than happy to take a look at your charts for you. Stephen could also do that if I'm not available, but I'd like to do that for you, and it won't cost you anything. I genuinely would like to just check the outlook for you and your husband. So we would need you to get your dates of birth, which I obviously know, but times of birth, as accurate as you can get them, and locations of birth. So I'm listed as Steve, and Stephen is listed as Stephen, I think. Contact one of us. And if you get hold of Stephen, then, and if I'm not there, then also ask Stephen to send me your information because I can look as well and get back to him. And then we can really have a good look at what the outlook is for you and see if we feel there's a risk, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Do all those sensible things like beefing up your home security and thinking about whether there's anybody that out there that you know could try and cause you a problem, and stay cautious, but don't worry or obsess over it, and we'll certainly check the outlook for you really thoroughly, much more than we can just on the radio show here, because we only have a certain amount of time, okay?
Okay. Is there a specific time that's better than others for you, like evening or day or something?
Think Sunday, actually. Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, I will be online. I'm pretty busy this week, so I'll be online Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, Sunday, and Stephen's online a lot as well. So we'd be more than happy to check the astrological outlook, because that's a great way of really looking specifically at whether there's any risk to you within certain time frames.
Okay? Okay. Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Okay, good night.
Thank you very much, Steve, for that reading. We definitely appreciate that. Well, now we come to the part of the show where we end things out. This was the 200th time that we have all met together like this, and we all have Doug to think about it. Doug is the executive producer. He's created this space in which we all congregate, and he's created a safe environment for both the psychic and for the customer as well. So we all want to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes to make all of this happen. I'd like to thank all of my co-hosts for joining me tonight, and I'd also like to remind everyone in the audience that you can visit Steve, visit Maureen, visit Carmen at psychicaccess.com, and if this is your first time, you get a free 6-minute sample. What could be better than that? The best value on the net for psychics. Now, coming up next week, looking forward as we always do, we have Maureen's show. What are you going to deal with next week, Maureen?
Deal with you. No. Transformative tarot counseling with Katrina Wayne. She's an MA, and it'll be very interesting because she is a counselor, but she also has trademarked the tarot counseling and what she does with tarot, and it'll be a fantastic and interesting different little approach on our normal regular tarot. So yeah, it'll be a fantastic show. So everybody, come on out. Okay.
I definitely would not miss it. I love the tarot, and you're one of the acknowledged experts of psychic access on the tarot. So it's going to be a wonderful
show. Yeah, I don't know about that, but no,
it's going to be a great show.
It'll be very great, and I really do appreciate the 200th show. I mean, Doug, and it's been a great time, and absolutely the vision is just continuing. Thank you to everybody that continues with us everywhere listening to.
Absolutely.
So good night.
Absolutely. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic Access, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.